I would like to call forth Representative Maslow, and I think Representative Lass is going to join you as well, and ask you to begin with the presentation of your bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Doug Maslow, representative from White Bear Lake. I know that time is short, and so I'm not going to give a big speech right now, and maybe not ever, which would be just fine by me. I appreciate the committee's willingness to take up time with this very important bill. We do have a number of testifiers, and I am going to take responsibility for managing their time. I actually have a stopwatch here, and I'm going to keep every individual testifier to 3 minutes. Mr. Chair, when does our group time, when does the time for the proponents run out so that I'm aware of that as well?
I think we had planned, I'm assuming that you do want to spend at least a little bit of time explaining the bill to the committee members, and I think we thought that would probably take us to about 10:30. That being the case, then 11:15 would be the hard stop time. And then likewise, 12 o'clock would be the hard stop time for the other group. Now, let's just use that and we'll be somewhat flexible. Obviously, if you get done a little bit early, then we have a little bit of flexibility, but that's the regular time frame.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. With that, I actually am going to take whatever summation time is at the end of our time, and at this moment, I'm going to turn things over to Representative Lass to discuss the bill a little bit for the committee, if I may.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm pleased to present for your consideration, along with Representative Neslow, House File 405. Representative Neslow is the chief author on this bill, and I'm the second author. It's sort of a companion bill to House File 412, which I'm the chief author, and Representative Neslow is the second author. This was an intentional display of bipartisan cooperation and support for the extension of the health and safety protections of the Clean Indoor Air Act to almost every worker in Minnesota. The act has two essential goals, that is to protect workers' health and to reduce health care costs. And I will take you very briefly through the bill itself. The Minnesota Clean Indoor Air Act was passed in the mid-1970s to protect workers and patrons and people who attend events in public indoor spaces in Minnesota. But it did not cover all such locations. At the time, it was the nation's first, and many, many states and, in fact, countries have enacted similar restrictions since that time. This bill is essentially to close the remaining exemptions in the Clean Indoor Air Act. It covers all workplaces, all places of employment, all public transportation, all public places. It has a long list of examples of places of employment that include a variety of places, are not limited, of course, to those locations, but they do include factories, warehouses, offices, retail stores, restaurants, bars, banquet facilities, theaters, and so on. It does include a definition of public place, which is not as extensive in listing examples, but it is tightened up to make sure that it is clear what is included in a public place. It contains a definition of smoking, so there isn't any question about that. It includes a definition of public transportation, also has the broad exemption provisions. There are a few exemptions, I should say, not broad, they're very narrow exemptions. Daycare premises are exempt. When there are no kids in the daycare, and as long as signs are posted, they're in-home daycare facilities. That's one of those private residence situations that are also have dual uses. As long as parents of the daycare kids know that they're coming into an environment where smoking is allowed off hours. There are healthcare facilities that have some definitions in there. Outdoor seating is addressed because indoor smoking would be prohibited. It kind of pushes the issue into the outdoor question. So that's the only place where we make any effort to deal with outdoor efforts. And the other basic exemptions cover scientific studies, Native American religious proceedings, and nursing homes, because once again, nursing homes are a private residence for the people who are living there, but it is one of those kind of group arrangements. And finally, hotel and motel sleeping rooms that are rented to guests, again, at least while they're in town or in the state, in that private hotel or motel, that is their private residence, and again, we tried to strike an appropriate balance. There are enforcement provisions in there which basically piggyback on the existing enforcement provisions found in the Clean Indoor Air Act, the Health Enforcement Act, and it just references that. It does establish as a petty misdemeanor for people who unlawfully smoke where they're prohibited from smoking. And then its administrative enforcement provisions for the indoor spaces themselves, the proprietors or the landlords. It does have some protections in there for employees or potential employees who complain about violations so that they are not unlawfully fired or discriminated against in any way. And it does provide for local ordinances to enact more stringent measures or to remain in effect if they have more stringent measures. That's the basic outline of the bill as proposed, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. While we have a moment, we have a quorum. If I may divert just for a moment and handle our minutes. Representative Powell, willing to move the minutes of our Tuesday, January 25th meeting. Members, I'll offer one amendment. Inadvertently, Representative Huntley had requested to be excused and was excused, and we'll make that correction to the minutes as well. Any further questions or comments? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. That completes your bill presentation. You're prepared now to move on for testimonies.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a few remarks in addition to the details of the bill. I remember that to bring testifiers up. Mr. Chairman, this is a bipartisan effort. Former U.S. Senator David Durenberger, who also chaired the Governor's Health Care Task Force, supports this bill. In fact, recommended extension of the Clean Indoor Air Act to enact the provisions or recommendations of that task force. Former Governors Arnie Carlson, Al Quie, and Wendy Anderson also support this bill. Grassroots action around the state, counties, and cities have passed their own ordinances or have asked specifically for statewide coverage. A third of the people in Minnesota are now covered by extension of the Clean Indoor Air Act type of provisions, including a full quarter covered by the kind of extensions contained in this bill. But don't let the tobacco industry and others play the state off against the local ordinances. They testified at the Senate last year that they oppose it statewide. They prefer it locally. Then a lot of them went to the local ordinances and said, don't do it here. We'd rather see something statewide. So you need to be careful about that. The health effects are incontrovertible. The health effects of secondhand smoke. You have handouts from the Minnesota Department of Health and the Commissioner of Health. In Helena, Montana, heart attacks dropped 40% when their smoking ban went into effect. Bar workers face a 200 to 300% increase in lung cancer rate because they're exposed to the equivalent of half a pack of cigarettes a day just by working. In Europe, Marlboro markets a pack of cigarettes that says on the front, smoking seriously harms you and others around you. That's the message here today. It's not the message that's contained in most promotions in the United States, however. Now, local business regulation threshold was crossed a long time ago. We regulate the temperature of the water behind the bar. There's no reason we can't regulate the presence of poisonous chemicals in the air of the bar. So we ought to cover bars and restaurants. And don't pretend that bars that only sell pizza, chips, and wings aren't competing with the restaurant across the street or won't expand their menus to do so. And you shouldn't play definitions or play games with the definitions of bars and invite enforcement issues about reporting revenue percentages for alcohol and food. Most importantly, the life of a bar worker is no less valuable than the life of a restaurant worker or an office worker. Yet 80% of office workers in Minnesota work in smoke-free environments. Only 29% of restaurant workers and 13% of bar workers do. We're dealing with very serious health costs, almost $2 billion a year in state employee benefits, as well as state health care programs. And in Delaware, they saw 95% reductions in cancer-causing pollutants in their restaurants and bars within 2 months after passing this. If Lexington, Kentucky, the heart of tobacco country, can do it, and if Ireland, Norway, Sweden, and even Uganda can do it, certainly Minnesota can. For the all of us, the 80% of us who don't smoke, but who are forced to smoke along with others who choose to smoke indoors, it's time to assert our right to breathe clean air. And I ask, if not you, who? And if not now, when? Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, Mr. Chair, we're ready with our first testifier. That would be Dr. Ed Ellinger.
And as the testifiers are coming forth and if people have a list, it would be helpful if they're prepared and ready. And also, members, unless there's really an absolutely burning clarification question, I think with respect to the testifiers, we need to let them continue. We're certainly not going to engage in debate today, but if there's a critical clarification question, I would recognize that. Otherwise, we'll proceed. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Chair Bradley and members of the committee, I am Dr. Ed Ellinger, Director and Chief Health Officer of Boynton Health Service at the University of Minnesota. I'm also a member of the Hennepin Medical Society Board and Chair of the Minnesota Medical Association Committee on Public Health. On behalf of the over 9,000 physicians, medical residents, and medical students represented by the MMA, and for the sake of college students and others who are disproportionately affected by secondhand smoke in bars and restaurants, I urge you to adopt this Freedom to Breathe Act. With one policy initiative, you can do more to improve the health of all citizens of Minnesota than anything that I can do as a practicing physician. Secondhand smoke, like asbestos, is classified as a Group A carcinogen by the Environmental Protection Agency. This means that secondhand smoke is known to cause cancer in humans. Mountains of research data show that the numerous toxins contained in secondhand smoke lead not only to lung cancer, but also to heart disease and other illnesses in non-smokers. The effects of secondhand smoke fall especially hard on children, where it is associated with an increased risk for sudden infant death syndrome, asthma, bronchitis, middle ear infections, and pneumonia. Because secondhand smoke is a major public health problem affecting people throughout Minnesota, I and the rest of the medical community applaud you for considering this Freedom to Breathe Act. But you will hear testimony in opposition to this piece of sound public health policy. Because they have lost the argument on the health effects, opponents of a comprehensive smoke-free workplace law will present several smoke screens to confuse you and the public. You will hear opponents state that a smoking ban will hurt business. You will hear proprietors' stories that predict the destruction of their life savings and testimony that rails against government intrusion into their affairs. Don't be fooled by these arguments. When you get beyond the anecdotes and look at objective data, you will see that there is no net negative effect on business activity where smoke-free laws have been implemented, while there is a tremendous positive effect on the health of the public. You will also hear that this is a matter of rights. I agree. By passing this bill, you will be protecting the right of everyone to breathe clean air versus the right of a few businesses to do whatever they want to do, even if it endangers the health of workers and patrons. Government's role is to protect its citizens. Government has frequently stepped in to protect us from things like asbestos, arsenic, and formaldehyde because, as a society, we believe that no one has the right to do whatever he or she wants if it endangers others. Now is the time for you to protect Minnesotans from the biggest killer of all, tobacco. Next Monday is the anniversary of the landmark 1964 Surgeon General's Report on Tobacco and Health. Given the overwhelming data on the risks of tobacco use and secondhand smoke that have been brought forward since that landmark report, I believe it is time to finally have sound public policy that protects the health of all of the public. The medical community strongly supports the efforts to protect everyone from the dangers of secondhand smoke and urges you to pass the Freedom to Breathe Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Next will be Dr. Ben Whitten.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chairman Bradley and members of the committee, my name is Benjamin Whitten. I'm a specialist in internal medicine practicing in the Twin Cities, and I'm chair of the Minnesota Medical Association Committee on Legislation. I'm here this morning on behalf of the Minnesota Medical Association that represents over 9,000 physicians, medical residents, and medical students across the state, and I'm here on behalf of the Hennepin Medical Society. I applaud Representatives Neslo, Latz, and others for bringing this important legislation forward. Minnesota was the first state to enact clean indoor air legislation to help protect Minnesota workers from the harmful effects of secondhand smoke. Now it is time that the right to breathe clean air is extended to all Minnesota workers, including bar and restaurant employees. Minnesota has already fallen behind. California, Connecticut, Delaware, Maine, Massachusetts, New York, and Rhode Island require all workplaces, including restaurants and bars, to be 100% smoke-free. It is no wonder that physicians are concerned about secondhand smoke. Secondhand smoke affects thousands of non-smokers each year. It causes heart disease, lung cancer, respiratory disease, low birth weight, and sudden infant death syndrome. Smoke from cigarettes and from smoke exhaled by smokers make up a dangerous haze with more than 50 cancer-causing ingredients. Arsenic, formaldehyde, and benzene are among them. Cancer-causing damage is gradual, but damage leading to heart disease starts quickly. Recent research published in the British Medical Journal found that hospital admissions from heart attacks in Helena, Montana fell by 40% during the 6 months that smoke-free workplace law was implemented. After this law was suspended, hospital admission rates for heart attack rebounded to pre-ban levels. This study demonstrates that even brief exposure to secondhand smoke can have significant health consequences. The Center for Disease Control subsequently issued a warning to people who are at risk for heart attack to avoid any exposure to secondhand smoke. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the scientific community has reached consensus. Secondhand smoke is a serious health hazard. Passing this...
Stop.
Thank you.
That was a good final comment anyway. That worked. We told you I'd be tough on this. Karen Zelznick is our next testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Karen Zelznick, and I'm the director of Bloomington's Public Health Department, but I am here today representing the local Public Health Association, also known as LPHA, which represents the state's county and city public health directors. I have two handouts for you this morning. One of them is a graph of a study done by MDH, and I'll talk about that in my presentation. The second one is an editorial from the Duluth Tribune. It was written by a small business owner who fought the ban on Duluth and chose to publicly apologize and support the ban after implementation. He actually ends his article with the phrase, "Just remember, this is an issue of health and not business," which I thought was very telling from a business owner. LPHA supports Representative Morfo's bill, House File 405. As representatives of local government public health departments, we take our responsibility to protect the public's health seriously. Government has a responsibility to pass and enforce public health laws and ordinances that protect not only the safety of the food we eat, the water we drink, but the air we breathe, what we're talking about today. As you just heard, the scientific and medical literature is clear. Exposure to secondhand smoke causes many illnesses. Contrary to popular belief, though, people younger than 65 account for almost half of all smoking-related deaths. Unfortunately, 3,000 young people each day take up smoking. Many experts have agreed that if tobacco were introduced as a new product today, the Federal Drug Administration would never approve its use. As you've also heard this morning, every time a tobacco product is lit or cigarette smoke is exhaled, poisons such as ammonium formaldehyde, hydrogen cyanide, carbon monoxide, and benzene are released into the air. These are those class A carcinogens. They cause cancer. We know what they are, we know what they do, and the government keeps a detailed list of them. Secondhand smoke contains more than 50 known cancer-causing agents and 200 known poisons. Businesses are not allowed to expose their employees or the public to any other Class A carcinogen. There are laws relating to asbestos. There are laws about what levels of harmful substances that industry can spew into our air. Why should secondhand smoke be an exception? We are asking for protection of workers and the public. So, who is exposed to secondhand smoke? That is your graph that you have before you. This one picture tells the story of who is exposed to secondhand smoke in the workplace. If you remember nothing else, remember this picture. Workplace clean air policies do not protect workers equally. This graph tells us that office workers are protected close to 90%, and then it goes on down the list until you end up with restaurants that serve alcohol at 23% protection and bars with the lowest level of protection for their workers. I think it might be interesting to know how many of those workers have health care insurance that are provided by their business, or if they can afford to buy it on their own. I thank you for listening to me this morning. We strongly encourage you to support your local policy decision makers and pass House File 405. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Pat Riker.
Just wanted to show you before I start the device that I will need to wear the rest of my life as a result of having been a smoker. This is liquid oxygen. It will carry about 4 hours at one time. I'm lucky to have it, or I won't be able to work at all. So I just wanted to see what it looks like.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. Pat Reichert. I live in Bloomington, and I still work full-time as a realtor. Especially because I can have liquid oxygen, I can. Otherwise, I would be tied to a cannula at home. I have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease known as COPD. That encompasses for me, and I'm a little short of breath, asthma, emphysema, and chronic bronchitis as a result of being a smoker. I started smoking as a young teenager, obviously many years ago, before there were any warnings. And 7 years ago, quit smoking and was diagnosed with COPD. Now, I was a primary smoker, but I have a couple other stories for you. My mother was never a smoker. She developed emphysema from secondhand smoke. A good friend of mine, who worked oxygen the rest of her life, she developed cancer, lung cancer, from secondhand smoke. Had her chemo and will wear a device like mine the rest of her life as well. And as the baby boomers come along, this is going to become the accessory of the future. You're going to see a lot of this with our portable oxygen gun because we smoked or we were around secondhand smoke. I unfortunately worked for a company that went smoke-free many years ago, and a college that listened to me, Normandale. When I asked them to petition so I could get in the building without walking through smoke, that 20-foot rule, I can't walk in any building without the outdoor 20-foot rule. For me, it would be asking, much like asking a diabetic to overdose on sugar, to ask me to walk through secondhand smoke to get into a building. Just for your information, just so you know that. Please do not delay on this. We're coming up with the March deadline for some, so let's pass this now and give the businesses all a level playing field in the state of Minnesota so that it'll protect our health and they won't have to compete between smoking and non-smoking for business, because I'm not against restaurants, but I am for healthy air, and there are those of us who have been damaged. Let's not let it happen to other people, and certainly not our young people. And I thank you very much for allowing me to come before you today.
Thank
Please
you.
Pass the bill.
Our next testifier is Ramel Jones.
Hello, my name is Ramel Jones. I own a small restaurant in Moose Lake, Minnesota. Our town was the first to pass a no-smoking ordinance in our restaurants in the year 2000. Business has been getting nothing but better and better and better, and I'm very proud of what our town did. One of the big arguments now is that owners should be allowed to decide for themselves whether smoking is allowed or not. Several years ago, When I got my computer, I decided to do something big with it, so I downloaded the Minnesota Food Code. When the printer finally quit spitting out pages, I had 120 of them, all with rules and regulations about how to keep the public safe from foodborne illnesses. And yet all that safe food could be served in a smoky, smoky room. And what I know is if I put the ingredients in the smoke that are in smoke into the food, I'd be closed down in an instant. And yet people would say that I should have a right to decide whether smoking is allowed when I don't have a right to decide anything about public safety where my business is concerned. The one thing that I really do know is that change happens. It happens all the time. Human beings are quite intelligent, and when we find out that something is harming us, we usually do something to make the harm stop. And we know that cigarette smoking and secondhand smoke is very harmful to us. We have elected officials, which in this case at this point would be you, that sometimes have to step in and make the final decisions. I would certainly ask that you would do that in this case. As I came in this morning, I noticed a big sign on the front of the Capitol building that says that this business is smoke-free. This business, of course it's a business, but it's a beautiful building. And I wondered, as I walked in, why this building would be more important than all the public places in Minnesota, whether they're small restaurants, large bars, bowling alleys, whatever they are, we're all just as important, and we all deserve the same clean, fresh air. Thanks for listening to me.
Thank you.
Next is Michelle Behringer.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Hi. My name is Michelle Behringer. I live in Circle Pines, but I work in a major restaurant in Minneapolis. I'm here because I'm a server, and you are listening to some awesome people. They've spent a lot of hours preparing and studying, and I really appreciate all their work. It's going to affect me, and every day I go to work, it is hard. You know, people come to celebrate birthdays, anniversaries, just to get away from the world of pressure. They've had a bad day at work. Now they've entered my workplace, and I'm supposed to help make that experience joyful for them. And that's really hard to do when you're working in a smoking section. If you were to look around and this was your office and every person out there could smoke right now, not just one, but maybe up to 30 people at one time, blowing it in your face, and you're supposed to smile at them and say, "May I take your order, please? How can I help you? What can I do for you?" Puff, puff, puff in your face. I hear about cancer, I hear about emphysema, but I want to tell you something that maybe you don't know. As a server, I get irritated eyes. I have a hard time breathing. I am not a smoker. I never have put one to my mouth. And I imagine, I hear stories about people who smoke the first time and they get nauseous. That happens to me every single time that I work in a smoking section. So much so that I really think I'm going to throw up. I have to leave to go into a different part of the restaurant to just get a full breath of air at times. It's so bad. However, what I'm noticing in the last couple of years, people are becoming more and more educated about smoking. Our smoking section has been decreasing in business. There's not a night that goes by that smoking section has a full reservation list. What's happening is people are becoming more aware, and our smoking section has become an overflow for walk-ins. And people don't like to sit there because they know that someone can be smoking right next to them. And it's not going to hurt our business. If anything, many of my coworkers really feel that what's going to happen on starting March 31st is our business is going to increase, because that smoking section will now be a non-smoking section, and our company will be able to take all those non-smoking reservations. It's not going to decrease. And just one last comment. I know I work in a really popular place, but I've worked in other restaurants from being a teenager all the way up. And I don't know I don't think I've ever seen an owner work in the smoking section for 6 to 8 hours. Not once. Not in any restaurant I've worked at. So I would challenge them. Try it. Just try it. One time. And see how you feel at the end of the night or the next day. I don't think they would do it. Even when they come in to eat, they don't sit in the smoking section. They sit in non-smoking, and they're the owners. So I just challenge them to think about that, and I just, please, pass this bill, because it affects me every day I go to work. Thanks.
Thank you.
Next is Megan Moriarty.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Megan Moriarty. I live in Sunfish Lake. I became a smoker when I was 18 years old and moved to New York City for college. For the next 4.5 to 5 years, I tried to quit smoking. But living in New York as a young person, I went out all the time, and it was a very social event for me. In addition, in January of 2001, I became a certified New York State EMT, emergency medical technician, and began working and volunteering as an EMT in Westchester County in the greater New York City area. And a great deal of that time is spent waiting for calls to come in, and it's actually quite boring until you're actually sent somewhere. And I found my smoking increased a great deal, actually, even though I was a healthcare worker and knew the risks. But I was still very desperate to quit smoking and tried several times, but never succeeded for longer than a 2-month period, always again falling into the trap of the social smoking. The smoking ban in New York really is what helped me get over that hump and helped me to quit. And December 30th of 2003 was the last time I smoked a cigarette, and I'm extremely happy about that experience. And I love the fact that I can go out in New York and not have to worry about waking up and feeling sick in the morning, smelling bad, that I can breathe regardless, and I would go out very often. So the shock to move back to Minnesota and find that I was sick in the morning, that I didn't feel good, and I've actually stopped going out very often because it's such a negative experience for me. I'm really hoping that you will pass this proposed legislation to help other young people who are smokers who started smoking socially and help them stop before it becomes a lifelong habit, before it becomes something that is truly detrimental to their health as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next testifier is Lester Collins.
Welcome to committee.
Thank you.
Good to see you again.
You too. Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Lester Collins. I'm the Executive Director of the State Council on Black Minnesotans, and I'm glad to speak today. As Executive Director of the Council on Black Minnesotans, I'm too aware of the diseases and the hardships that afflict our community, that is, the African and African-American community, from heart disease to cancer, from childhood asthma to sudden death, infant syndrome. African Americans in Minnesota are more likely to suffer and die than the average population, oftentimes with health issues that affect not just our community, but all Minnesotans. The causes are complex, the answers are out of reach, and the cures are obviously costly. This is a rare opportunity for you as lawmakers. You have the chance to save lives, reduce the burden of disease, and you can do it without spending a dollar. You have decades of science on your side, the support of Minnesotans, common sense, and the issue of justice. You have a chance to make a substantial, immediate, and even more importantly, a lasting difference in the health of African Americans and all Minnesotans by supporting this measure and protecting our freedom to breathe. This is probably one of the most sound public policy decisions that you will make. I urge you to make it to the positive today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is Nate Weiler.
Good Chairman and members, thank you. My name is Nathan Weiler. I am a bartender at a major local restaurant and bar in Duluth, Minnesota. As Pat had showed you before, she had to show you her device to help her breathe. This is mine. I'm an asthmatic, so working in an environment such as the bar that I work in, it's extremely hard to breathe in. Talking to other employees and friends of mine that work with me experience the exact same troubles that I have in breathing when working on the job. Let me paint a picture. Walking into the bar, smoke everywhere. Everybody's smoking. You can't take one breath of fresh air. And on the inhaler, it says use every 4 to 6 hours if needed. A given day, I'm a very active person. I'm a runner. I've done marathons. I've done triathlons. So in a given day, it's not very hard for me to breathe. However, when I do work, I have to use my inhaler maybe once every 2 to 3 hours, which is an overdose, if you will. But it's the only thing I have to survive in that environment. When I've taken breaks from work, say I take a month vacation, a 2 month vacation, I see improvement in my lung function. And on coming back to work, it's obvious to me. I wake up in the mornings and have acute asthma attacks, lots of phlegm buildup. Excuse that, but lots of hawking, if you will, in the morning. I have to shower every night at 4 in the morning, so my sheets don't smell when I wake up. It's not a comfortable environment to be in. And I also understand that people will make the argument that I have the choice to work where I please. However, I've worked for this place for the last 4 years since it opened. I'm very dedicated to my restaurant. And I don't feel like I should have to make that choice to move when I have a steady income through the job that I have. I have, however, cut back my hours in the bar and work in the restaurant where it's smoke-free. The restaurant I work in Duluth has a separate area in the bar that's closed off. So there is smoking allowed, and it's one of the only places in Duluth, actually, that you can smoke in. And it just happens to be profitable for me to work in the bar. I make a better income in there, but due to the health effects, I have chosen to move into the restaurant and pick up more hours there. But like I said to you earlier, it's harshly affects my asthma, and I worry about further health effects that have caused. Obviously, you've heard the doctors talk about cancer and heart disease, and I've noticed more problems breathing in my lungs. I've had heart pain and heartburn. I don't know if that has to do with it, but it makes me paranoid. It makes me worry about further health effects that I could suffer from this. So I urge you to, in my case, and for the case of other service workers in the state, to pass the Freedom to Breathe Act. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Our next testifier is Dr. Dorothy Hatsukami.
Welcome,
committee. Yes, thank you for inviting me. My name is Dorothy Hatsukami, and I'm a professor and researcher at the University of Minnesota Cancer Center. Over the past several years, we've conducted studies aimed at specifically addressing the level of harm that environmental tobacco smoke poses to those who work or patronize bars, restaurants, and casinos. And I'd like to briefly present findings from 2 studies. In these studies, we examined in non-smokers exposed to environmental tobacco smoke the uptake of a potent cancer-causing agent. It's called NNK. And we measured the uptake in urine samples provided to us by these participants of our study. Our first study explored the potential harm that non-smoking casino patrons face when they visit a casino where smoking is allowed. By collecting urine samples of non-smokers both before and after their visit to the establishment, our researchers found that, on average, non-smokers...
Thank you so much for your time and attention.
Thank you for your testimony.
Our next testifier is Joe Yankowski.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Joseph Yankowski. My training and expertise is as a former paramedic and healthcare economist. I come as a concerned citizen. During my tenure as chair of the Bloomington Advisory Board of Health, I was fortunate to have the honor to oversee the Bloomington Report to the City Council, which regarded smoke-free workplaces on restaurants and bars. The study was a rather comprehensive and scientific review of the current issues you face today regarding how to develop policy on this topic. The study identified several findings relevant to today's hearing. First, from the medical community, Research demonstrating the negative health effects of secondhand smoke is extensive and growing. The risks are greater than previously thought, as indicated by recent CDC reports and warnings. That answers the why not now. There's no safe level of exposure to tobacco smoke. Some populations are especially at risk for problems caused by secondhand smoke, such as infants, children, and others with chronic diseases. Employees in workplaces that permit smoking are at increased risk for health problems. From the legal standpoint, one of the findings was the government's role of protecting the public's health includes responsibility to implement community-wide measures to improve the health of its residents. From the economic standpoint, numerous well-researched studies report either no impact or a positive impact to restaurants and bars in communities that adopt smoke-free workplace ordinances. The facts are clear. The fears of businesses suffering due to the implementation of smoking bans are exaggerated. Many organization managers do not recognize that non-smokers outnumber smokers 4 or 5 to 1, and if you meet the needs of the majority of your constituents, you will thrive. It is a basic economic law that when you provide services to the largest consumer base, you will succeed. Finally, the final finding that I'd point out is recent polls conducted in Minnesota and Minneapolis show broad public support for implementing smoking bans in public places, including restaurants and bars. These findings supported the decision for Bloomington to develop and implement an excellent ordinance and provided the scientific basis for several other communities to adopt ordinances as well. The report is available on the Bloomington website. I recommend that you support the Representative Benzelow's House Bill 405 without amendment, as strong law would provide consistency among communities. Many of the opponents in testimony before community councils have indicated they would also support a state bill, as they were concerned that bars and restaurants would suffer from differing standards and implementation. The good news is we know how to address the health issue now, and that it's significant. We know that businesses will not suffer economically as once feared. That's why I feel confident to make this recommendation to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And our final testifier is Pat McCone.
Morning, welcome to the committee.
Good morning. We have lots of snow in Duluth. Snowing this morning when I left. So, well, I first thank you for this opportunity and say I'm here because I want to change the way Big Tobacco does business in Minnesota, and I'm really tired of losing loved ones and hearing those stories from the many you've heard here today, if only. I'd also like to say respectfully, before the opposition comes up, is to say we can all have our own opinions, and I've heard a lot of them about what has happened in Duluth, but there's truly only one set of facts. And I'm here to shed a little light on the truth from Duluth and set the stage for the next group of speakers. The sales tax data in Duluth is clear. We collect the city sales tax on restaurants without alcohol licenses and restaurants with. Those without alcohol licenses are entirely smoke-free. And I can tell you and will share with you the city sales tax data. We did not add convenience stores to this, as I have heard. Says for smoke-free restaurants, we're up 12% this year, and for bar restaurants, they're up 6%. The good news is both are up, but the truth is smoke-free is doing doubly as good as smoking in separate rooms, and I will share that with you. I've also heard the horror stories about the places that have gone out of business. I know where they are. I see them. I know business has changed hands. They've opened. They've sold. It's the natural occurrence of this type of industry. We have tracked that data since the 1990s.